Welcome to the Football by Football Podcast.
All right, welcome back to the Football by Football Podcast. This is Matt Chatham, your host. Fired up to be doing the show again. Obviously, it's a little later in the week than we usually do this show. It's Friday morning, and we're off and rolling with a Thursday game under our belt. Had some technical snafus, which is par for the course in the old podcasting world. But fired up today to have Rocky Boyman on with us. Rocky's calling in from Utah. He's got a big game out there this week in college football. Rock, how's it going, man?
Doing good, man. Glad to be back with you, buddy.
All righty, well, let's just dive into it. As we mentioned, we're obviously doing the show here after the Thursday night game happened. The big story coming away from it is obviously Baltimore pulling themselves back into that game, the game going into overtime, a couple sort of player issues that I guess would jump out to me. Obviously, these guys just had 3 days rest, both teams, and they went into an overtime game on a Thursday night late into the evening. One, sort of how emotionally tolling that must be. And two, I'd like to get sort of your player take on what went down with Josh Scobie. Obviously, for the Steelers, missing a couple kicks that clearly played a role in the outcome of the game. Have you been through something like that as a player? Not obviously, outright losing the game for your team, but having something that was going to weigh heavily on you and trying to figure out a way to put it behind you and go forward to the next week.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you've been a part of wins and losses. Same thing. You got to find a way to put that behind you. But just know, as a guy, you know, I played 1 year for Mike Tomlin in Pittsburgh, and the fact that he, you know, chose to go for fourth down there twice didn't surprise me at all. I mean, he's always been a guy, right. And you know, I played under him. He's going to go with his gut. He's also, you know, not going to just, you know, play the percentages and all. Well, a kick is a better thing here, you know. In his mind at that point, he said, look, our kicker was done. He can't make a field goal, so we're going to go about it this way. And I don't think that the team second-guessed that at all. I still think it was the best decision. It's just, you know, obviously when a much, much different story had Ben Roethlisberger been a quarterback versus Mike Vick, who's, what is he now, 36 years old? Kind of struggling a little bit. So, yeah, it's one of those things. And to your point about, you know, I mean, it was just a tough game because, you know, both those teams coming off, you know, situations where they needed wins badly and they're kind of banged up. I mean, Baltimore doesn't have anybody to throw the ball to except Steve Smith, and he goes down in the game. And it's just, man, it was just kind of right. It reminded me of a Thursday night game in December, you know, where everyone just seems beat up and tired and all right. that. And but it just shows you that's the kind of level of play in the AFC North.
Yeah, and one thing that popped out to me, you know, and I was being sarcastic, as you know, social media will bring out of people. So it was really kind of noticing people complaining about injuries. And I sent out a tweet last night kind of joking that, hey, you know, realize these guys have only had 3 days rest. And so you should be on injury alert as things take off. And right as that final period began, two guys went down within the first couple, first maybe five or six plays. And all I'm thinking is, wow, as a player, just what your body must feel like. And I've done a lot of, I think five, six, seven, something like that, Thursday games for whatever reason, just luck of the draw. We had a lot of those on our schedules. I think four Thanksgivings and a handful of those kickoff games. So at least the Thursdays at the beginning of the season, you can see it coming. It's just sort of how your body just feels different when they throw a game at you that quickly. And I always just, I dumb luck, I guess. We got annihilated. We got blown out in one of those on the road in Detroit 1 year. And then we won the other three pretty comfortably. So it was nice that they weren't, I guess, competitive down the row. Stretchers, I mean, almost sounds weird to say from a player's perspective, but the idea, I guess, now in my head, knowing how I was feeling heading into the second half of those games, that there might have been an extra period on top of it. Wow. Like, just, I'm sure those guys now would love to just, you know, go on vacation for 10 days to try to get their bodies back.
Right. No, you're right. And 2 points, you made a good point about, you know, the timing of the Thursday night games, because, you know, to your point, and it's happened to me in most of the Thursday night games I played, they were late in the year, you know, Thanksgiving. And by that time, right. I feel like one year we played the Falcons, who were completely out of it. And then the other, I forget who we played, but there's kind of the same situation where, you know, one of the teams was probably going to the playoffs. And the other team was, you know, basically couldn't wait to get the season over with a little bit. You know what I mean? So it's kind of a different kind of game versus this is that early Thursday night game off a short amount of rest where both these teams are, God, just trying to fight and scratch and claw and save their season, and then for it to go into an extra period. I got to say that the happiest team in the league right now is the Cincinnati Bengals. If you're watching that game, because you're like, we're 3-0. The other two contending teams have two losses, and now they're both beat up. You know, they both played an extra period on Thursday night. I think they're looking really good for Cincinnati right now.
No, I think that's a great point. And I was wondering that as this is going down, obviously we see things up here from the Northeast. Sort of, they're always looking big picture. I mean, obviously the Bengals have arrived on everyone's radar up here, clearly. I mean, they're playing extremely well, as good as anyone in the AFC. But then you start to think, and they always do it around here. It's just part of being in this New England environment where they've won so much. Everyone wants to see who the threat is, right? And even when Baltimore struggles, I think there's still this thing in the back of people's head that Baltimore in a one-day fight, it can always be a danger. But as you watch them sort of, you know, tearing each other apart, you know, guys going down left and right, both of the Steelers, you almost feel in that division, sort of much as you touched on, that the Bengals can kind of keep those two at arm's length, let them beat each other up with all the issues they have now with Vic being in at quarterback and doing an okay job last night, but it's just simply not the same. They're not able to take advantage of the talent that they have at the offensive skill position. And the Ravens, they don't have anyone to throw to. You mentioned that as well. Perriman, the big first-round draft pick they go out and get, they don't even have him available. He's having day-of-game surgeries on his knee out of left field. So you got to be fired up if you're a Bengals fan. And I think from a New England perspective, some of those teams that we think that, you know, the Pittsburgh Steelers, we kind of figure they'll get their act together by December and they'll be back and ready. But if they keep losing games like this, that it would have been really nice to get that one. That's a loss on the wrong side. And all of a sudden the threat's thin, and it's just, hey, there's the Bengals, and maybe they'll still be playing like they are now, you know, 3.5 months from now, or maybe they won't. So it's interesting that we're this early in things. There's a little bit of clarity at a time where you don't usually expect it.
It really is. And just, you know, just a comment on the Bengals, you know, obviously because I'm here in Cincinnati and I see them a lot. I mean, they and I know nationally everyone is really hesitant to give them any credit. And I understand because, you know, when the lights are bright and in the night games and, of course, the playoff games, they always seem to fizzle out. But I really think this is a different team. And just in terms of Andy Dalton, and I know he's always been the guy that he's put up some good numbers, but he can't win the big one.
Right.
To me, I thought last week versus Baltimore, he made a big step because what he's, you know, I've seen Andy Dalton play great games. I've seen him play terrible games, of course. What I haven't seen much, Matt, is the game where he does okay, but then has some adversity late, okay, and then bounces back and is able to lead his team to victory. And that's what he did. He led, you know, in the third and fourth quarter of that game, Baltimore was, you know, their defense was playing really well. The Bengals' defense was all of a sudden, for whatever reason, playing terrible. And Dalton gives up two turnovers. One was an interception. The other one was a sack fumble for a touchdown. And he led the Bengals back on not one but two fourth-quarter touchdown drives. Again, that's something you haven't really seen out of Dalton. And I think he won over a lot of teammates, you know, especially on the defensive side of the ball with that performance, which makes me really think now that they're a little bit more for real than they've been in the past.
I think it's an excellent point, and especially in that they won their games in different ways each of the several weeks. And in that game, again, you know, with our locks picks that we do here on the website at FBF, we had the Bengals as one of our picks, and there was that moment where they went down late, and they went down late twice. And that's the adversity you spoke of, where I think in a different season and in other past performances you've seen, maybe, you know, there's the stat accumulation to the point, but they don't get it done in the final moment. To not only do it once, but to do it a second time, that showed sort of that moxie that you want to see from a team that is finally able to get over the hump. I mean, again, I'm going to mention these two names, and it's not because I'm trying to draw a parallel between the two of them. I'm just trying to draw a parallel between, I think, the perception of the two guys. The Peyton Manning was in that spot for the longest time in his career. It was like, great, go get all your stats in the regular season. You'll never get over the hump.
Yep.
And there was that moment where they surpassed the Patriots on in a regular season game, and they had their other moments, a tough road game in Kansas City, or, you know, a win in San Diego or something like that that goes down late, where it's like, okay, we know you can compile stats. We actually know you can compile regular season wins as well. How about you overcome something? And that was such a huge moment for that Colts team. Obviously, you played for that team. And it's sort of where I think it fills up a locker room. It's like, okay, we can do this now. And I think if you're a Bengals fan, The two things you're going to be cheering for is health, which matters so much, I think, for all those amazing offensive weapons that they have over there. And then the second thing is just that they continue to overcome adversity, because it's going to be something different every week. I think the defense played really well at times, played pretty poorly situationally at the end, but the offense bailed them out. There's going to be weeks where one week's good, the other group's gone. You just can't have weeks where both sides are bad.
Right. Well, you're right. And that's the key to a good football team. And you know that as well as anybody. Yeah. One week for whatever reason, your defense, God, they just can't get it together. That's when you need your offense to kind of pull them out. And I thought that's what, you know, the Bengals offense did in the fourth quarter of that game. I think the other thing of note this year for the Bengals is, you know, they started off 3-0 last year, and same deal. Everyone was excited. Oh my God, here we go. Well, and then they had a bye week. Okay. And then their gift after the bye week was playing the Patriots in Foxborough at a night game. They got blown out. That was the kickstart of the Patriots season. And I think it's good for the Bengals that they don't have that now. They're kind of hot, and you know, Matt, when you're hot, you don't want the bye week. You want to keep going. So they're going to play Kansas City this week, Seattle the next week, and I think that'll help keep the continuity going for them.
Let's pause for a moment here to acknowledge our sponsor. Obviously, by now, you've seen the ads. We've all seen the ads. Your friends are playing. It's time to get signed up at FanDuel.com. FanDuel's the leader in one-week fantasy football, with more winners and more payouts than any other site. They're paying over $75 million a week this season. That's a lot of money. So building a team is easy. We all know this. That's why we love FanDuel. You just go out and pick your players, stay under the salary cap, and sit back on Sunday and watch your team win. Those entry fees are low at just $1, so anyone can play. You know fantasy football. You've been doing this for a while, so prove it at FanDuel. Go to FanDuel.com and click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner. Use our code FBF and sign up now. Special offer is still out there, and for all of you new users, for every dollar you deposit, FanDuel is going to match it with up to $200 that gets earned as you play. That's a bonus of up to $200 that's only good for the first 50 people that use our code FBF today. Don't forget to use my code FBF. FanDuel.com, where every day is a new season. That's FanDuel.com. Sign up today. Well, we sort of talked about off air, you know, you're working a BYU game this weekend for ESPN. And it's, to me, the Chiefs sit sort of in that BYU kind of environment. Not that it's exactly analogous in the pros. I mean, I think pros are pros and they shouldn't have the same kind of letdown, but I look at the Kansas City Chiefs really letting a squeaker go away against the Broncos 2 weeks ago, where, you know, everyone in the world was retiring Peyton Manning in the second quarter, and only for him to come back and play well in the second half and knock the Chiefs off at home on a big, you know, national televised game. And then they got to travel to Green Bay, right, which is one of the most difficult places to go in football. They travel there for another big Monday night game. And they, you know, there's a ton of space between them in the middle quarters and make a decent comeback at the end. But they still lose by a safe margin. Two sort of emotional big ticket losses. And then you have to arrive in Cincinnati for a team that's hot, that gets to sit at home, that has relative health right now. I think that's one of those games where, and again, I'll actually add this into my picks this week for our FBF locks. That's my contribution. I feel good about the Bengals, and I'm ready to be burned. I mean, I expect that at some point I will, but I think right now riding the Bengals until they prove otherwise is a safe enough bet, especially with a Chiefs group that I think comes in, you know, really, really badly needing this game and maybe not being sort of in the team state to get it done. But all right, I'm going to transition here into our What Have We Learned section or segment. What did we learn? We do What We Learned every week. Obviously, we're doing a later in the week show, so we don't want to spend a ton of time on last weekend's game, but I'm going to try to transition into how what we learned last week will actually be relevant to what's about to happen. And for me, that's the Atlanta Falcons. I spent a lot of time a week ago talking about the Falcons, talking about the Giants, talking about the Cowboys. And, you know, the big talking point was really Brandon Weeden. You know, what can they be in the absence of Romo? I think people overlook the Falcons. They presume that, you know, they'd had some wins, but I mean, they're beating up on the NFC East that was looking a little suspect, and people don't know what to make of them. But I think you go on the road in a difficult place to play like that, even, and Brandon Weeden plays clean through the first half. He actually played pretty solid, but able to go down there, and basically now they've beaten all three teams in the NFC East other than the Redskins. that would, I mean, be the presumable top portion of that. And they did it with some adversity. They got down, they came back. I mean, it's a little bit comparable to the Bengals situation. So for me, what I learned is that I think Atlanta is legit. They have a running game, which is not something that they've had. I mean, there was a time where they made that investment to go get Steven Jackson at the tail end of his career. It just didn't quite work out. They now have that running game, and that's even in the absence of Tevin Coleman, who will now be back and hasn't been a big part of things. So they have the chance to be maybe a two-headed team comparable to the Bengals. But they have the most incredible stretch of games coming up that I think anyone on an NFL roster, if you were any one of the other 31 teams and you said, hey, what will my next 7 games be? I think you would choose what the Falcons have. They have the Texans coming up, which was they're reeling, but they're a desperate team that's still talented, but who knows what you'll get from that. Then they go Redskins, Saints, Titans, Bucks, Niners, Colts. Literally each of those teams.
That's a great stretch.
It's ridiculous. I'm not even saying they're bad teams. I'm just saying each of these teams has huge identity issues, and none of them, I mean, you know, some of them could end up, you know, 2 from the list of 7 could end up turning around and being good teams, but they literally have survived the early gauntlet 3-0 surprisingly, and have this stretch of teams that all are trying to figure themselves out. They have quarterback issues. They have health issues. They have, God knows what. So if anything, schedule, believing in the head coach, love Danny Quinn, and seeing the adversity they've overcome early, I think I learned that the Atlanta Falcons are going to be a real player in the NFC. How about you, or what have you learned, Rocky? Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, I agree with you, and it's funny because in terms of the, you know, my what have I learned, mine has to do with the Falcons as well, but a little bit just a different, you know, spin on it is, what I've learned with what the Falcons have done is that head coaching matters in the NFL. You know, in baseball, it doesn't matter hardly at all. Basketball, hardly at all. In baseball example, here in Cincinnati, everyone wants to fire the manager, Brian Price, because he's not going. And it's like, what does he do? He has no real effect on the day-to-day operations of it's more, it's pitching and can you hit the ball with runners in scoring position, right? But I think what we're seeing in the NFL and Dan Quinn is just another perfect example of it is head coaching and his ability to change the culture around there matters. You know, I read a bunch of articles and talked to some folks down there, and, you know, he's really, his big mantra is finish. And he seems to be a guy, Matt, and you know this because you've played for some great coaches. To me, the great coaches are the ones that find a way to talk to each individual player. You can't have a coach that treats everyone the same, because every guy is not the same. Some guys you yell at and they go in the tank. Other guys you yell at and they pick their level of play up. Some guys you fine them and it doesn't matter. Some guys you take away their playing time and that's what really gets them motivated. You know what I mean? So a great coach, in my opinion, and especially in football, finds a way to trigger each and every little guy. And he seems to have really done that. He brought that whole mantra and culture from Seattle, and he just seems like his players are buying into him. And to me, that's what I learned is, you know, people want to talk about the players in the NFL, and of course that's first and foremost, but right below that is a great leader and a head coach, and I think Dan Quinn's shown us that.
Well, I think it's an excellent point that works sort of universally around the league. You look at some of these teams that are playing at a really high level. Obviously, Marvin Lewis doesn't get that credo from a lot of people until he gets over the hump. He'll probably sit there sort of in sort of no man's land, but it's certainly good coaching. But I look at Bruce Arians and look at the other side of the docket, you know, out in the NFC. I mean, the leadership there, and it's different. The style is exactly polar opposite from Bill Belichick, but you have buy-in. You have all these guys who dig what he's into, like the personality. They buy in. They're willing to sort of adhere to whatever he's going with, and there's sort of a trust there that you can hear. And you read it in all the comments that come out of the player interviews. I watch their videos, watch the stuff they put out throughout the week, and it's like, dude, these are guys who get it. They're sort of uniformity in the message from the players down from the coach, and that's really what New England's been all about. The other place I look is Green Bay, and Mike McCarthy got a ton of shit, and I don't think it was unwarranted for a lack of aggressiveness, I guess, in that NFC Championship game a year ago. But what do? They go into the offseason, and they're literally the one player of the 32 that almost completely stays out of free agency. They basically do nothing. They re-sign their own guy. They make sure they get Cobb's back. But they don't buy into the hype. They don't buy into sort of the hot sports take stuff, and they're not going to do some knee-jerk reaction to sort of outside the building perception. They develop the crap out of players. They don't overpay for the ones that they don't want to retain. And they're just not real big players in free agency. And when you hear sort of the tempo, it comes from the coach. It comes from Aaron. You hear Aaron Rodgers from the podium, and he is even keeled as all hell. And, you know, they lose, you know, they used their top wide receiver in Jordy Nelson, and people don't seem to blink. So I think a lot of that, you know, that just doesn't magically come up from the earth. You know, that comes from sort of the leadership. The leadership really matters when stuff sort of hits the fan. And that happens a lot around the league. And some of these teams that do best don't ride the roller coaster. And I think that's definitely to their credit.
Right. Well, and the teams that don't ride the roller coaster are the ones that, don't have the leadership, don't have the, you know, the development of players. You talked about, you know, the fact that Green Bay and, you know, the amount of players in their team that are drafted. They don't do a bunch in free agency. The Bengals did next to nothing in free agency. I think the Bengals have six guys on their team that weren't either drafted or signed as a free agent out of college on their team. Arizona's the same way. You know, New England, that's kind of the same way. They get a free agent here and there. But for the most part, as they develop their guys, and guys have bought into that system, they feel like they've been brought up to that system, and that leadership and everything exuded down from the head coach is really important.
Well, in those situations too, and this is a knock that New England's usually given, that you'll mention that sort of that approach, and they'll say, "Well, of course you can do that. You have Tom Brady." Well, again, maybe that's true, maybe that's not true. So you kind of put that on the shelf for a second. You look at Arizona and Green Bay, and they're not aggressive either. Now, the Green Bay argument, well, they got Aaron Rodgers, so you're in a luxury position. Everyone can't not be as aggressive as you are. I look at Arizona, that doesn't hold up, because Carson Palmer is a good but middling quarterback. I don't think anyone out there, other than the performance he's had in September, would put him in that even top 15 class. He's a good starter. He's solid, stable, but he's had injury issues. But they didn't go out and, you know, get, you know, whatever. They didn't go pay for Demaryius Thomas or Julius Thomas or whoever was the top ticket guy. I'm not going to go purge Dez Bryant, you know, or something like that, because it didn't work for them. Essentially, that offense that's the top of the league offense right now was one of the worst NFL offenses at the end of the year last season. And they're virtually unchanged. Yeah. They juiced the backfield a little bit, got a little more talent back there. Ellington's healthier. The quarterback's back now. But as far as offensive weapons are getting the ball, still Larry Fitzgerald, still Michael Floyd, who's been injured. They're not overly athletic at any particular position. They just do their stuff well. They execute, and that counts for a lot. So I think we're in a world now where people got to go out and think you have to go buy wins, and it's not always the case. So anyway, all right, we're going to move on here to our final segment, something we like to do every week called Unanswered Questions.
Unanswered Questions.
I really, really, really want to know.
You don't want to know.
Yeah, I
want to
know how come.
You
want to
know?
I
want to
know.
Okay, I'm going to tell you.
Now, Unanswered Questions is a very important segment this particular weekend, because we're doing the show later in the week, and I think there's a lot of stuff that sits on an exciting weekend of games that none of us know. And I think we'll learn a lot, because we're right at that sort of precipice, right at that point where we've just exited September. The month of September is always kind of goofy. There's a lot of stuff that will go on that may not be relevant to December. You kind of just survive it, make sure your record is as good a shape as possible, figure out who you are, and then start game planning forward. For me, the unanswered question that I have is really what is going on in this NFC East. I think it's the division where we went into the offseason with a ton of hype. You know, Chip Kelly's going to take that step forward. This is going to be a Wild West, Wild East, I guess, kind of offense. And who knows what amazing statistical accomplishments they could potentially have. The Cowboys, you know what? That offensive line's the best in football. You can let DeMarco Murray go. They re-signed Dez. You know, this kind of, you know, they're going to juice some of these young wide receivers that they have that are now going to get greater roles. The defense is only getting better. You're now going to get Greg Hardy and Gregory from Nebraska as a top pick. I mean, there's enough plausible hype, I think, around those two teams. I think that, you know, the tide's going to rise. The Giants are going to get back Victor Cruz, you know, and now they'll have this complimentary group of weapons with Odell and Cruz and Larry Donnell is better, and the backs are going to be juiced now by Shane Vereen. I mean, there were so many good, believable storylines. Now the Redskins, I'm not mentioning. there's so many believable storylines in those three groups. And they're in disarray a bit right now. And the Eagles offensive line has been taking the brunt of the heat, but for some reason they can't call plays and execute plays to move the football like you would expect them to. Dallas is just more an issue of injuries. You can't blame them. The guys are going down left and right. I think they played to put 28 points on the board a week ago is actually pretty surprising considering Whedon comes in and does the job that he did. They have Lord knows who they're even throwing the football to. Jason Witten's got two bad ankles. I mean, like it was, I think they're doing something there. But again, for the unanswered question of this point, we're going to go through this weekend, and I think we're going to start to learn a lot about somebody from that group has to pull away because there's a huge opportunity for somebody to come out of a group that's pretty battered.
Well, I certainly agree with you. I mean, that was a division you looked at before the season, and you go, okay, three of the four teams, you know, yeah, they may beat each other up a little bit, but three of the four of those teams, minus the Redskins, of course, are really, really good. And it's been a kind of a haphazard start for that whole division. And in terms of, you know, to your point of what we're still learning or what we don't know is I'm still ready for this magical guru Chip Kelly team that he's formed together. I'm still waiting for it to work. You know what I mean?
Right.
I trust him. I think he's brilliant. I love everything about him. I love the way he thinks outside the box here and stuff. But at some point, all that's got to translate to wins, Matt, and it's right. Not there. And then, you know, it'd be easier to go with the Eagles and say, okay, they're going to figure it out and this and that. But then I think once, you know, Dallas gets back to healthy, which may still be a few weeks, I still think they'll be in it. But, yeah, it's kind of a – it really is a tough division to figure out right now.
Right now, this is the moment. I mean, this is sort of that whole shot. Like, you've got a moment here while some of these people are down. So if you're Chip Kelly, I think you have to – this could be one of the – and I hate hyperbole, but it sounds like I'm about to do it. But this could be one of the most important prep weeks that you have throughout the season, because I think you look at the team and they're not depleted like some of the others are. They just haven't figured themselves out. So there's this moment right. where – you know, Dallas has – they have an opportunity here with a Saints team that's even more beat up than they are, or at least as beat up. And then you also have the Redskins and Eagles playing against one another. So somebody in the division is going to get a knock here. So I think if the Eagles – you know, and I forgot to mention the other team, the Giants have a really tough road game in Buffalo, and Buffalo's been sort of percolating themselves. So I think it's a week where if for some reason the Eagles stumble now and give one up to the Redskins, I mean – man, that's again, I don't like sort of one game signifying an entire season, but you do have to understand that the opportunity is so big in front of you. And since your issues are more just figuring yourself out and you have people that have been successful with you before, it's just a matter of sort of configuring things and making a run. And if that means it's Sam right. Bradford, if that means it's Mark Sanchez, who knows? But you have to look at those guys and say, this one's on you. You got to figure it out. And one final point on that I should make quickly, but Joe Philbin down in Miami has been getting a ton of heat. I think he's got one of the hottest seats in football right now because there was a lot of talk as Mike Tannenbaum came in that potentially, you know, that wasn't his guy and they're going to re-up their quarterback, but are they going to hang on to the head coach? But you know what? We've infused a place with so much talent. One of the things I saw last weekend's game was the sideline was sort of blown. There was some NFL sound or they caught Philbin yelling at his guys to hustle off the field and let's go, let's stay in this. And you saw 5-6 dudes just hang their heads and just walk right by him and ignore his comments. The reason I bring Philbin up, though, is because we're having this conversation about Chip Kelly. I think you get to that point where players might roll their eyes in the building about the guru and genius stuff because players have seen a lot, you know. And I think players are a little more bottom line. It's like, we have to win. We have to score points. Like, I'm not giving you credit for being a genius unless we're winning, you know. So there's a possibility of a tune-out factor with Chip if it doesn't get turned in because he's so different than everyone else.
Right. No, I think you're absolutely right. Just to quickly end that, you talk about the Eagles – you know, probably just an identity, and they're still trying to figure themselves out. Well, now's the time they want to figure this out while the fact that Dez Bryant's hurt and Tony Romo's hurt
right.
and Randy Gregory's hurt, you know, you want to do a lot of your figuring out and you're winning now because once those guys get back for the Cowboys, it's they're going to really, really – I think they'll really, really roll. So now's the time, you know, they need to do some of that figuring out. All right, I'm going to go to my unanswered question, and this has to do with the Carolina Panthers, and they're 3-0.
Okay.
And nobody would have guessed that they would be 3-0 at this point. Now, they haven't played obviously the toughest schedule, or they have the Jags and the Texans in the Saints. But look, 3-0 is 3-0, and then I think they're playing
right.
Well. They seem to have a lot of juice. I guess my unanswered question is they're relying so much on Cam Newton and his ability to do what he's kind of what he's known for, which is, you know, run and scramble and be tough and kind of be a running back there. And which again, it's great. They're 3-0 and they're winning. Everyone seems to have a lot of belief. I think their schedule is favorable. They play the Bucs this weekend, and then they get a bye week before going out to Seattle. So they could be 4-0 here by the time week 6 rolls around.
Right.
So, you know, so that's all good, but how they're winning concerns me, and that's putting so much on Cam Newton's shoulders and you know, making him do so much in terms of running. I just think at some point he's going to get beat up, he's going to get hurt, and when there's no one else, no other weapons to rely on really for him on the offensive side of the ball, I don't see this lasting. Again, so it's unanswered for me. I think they're doing well, and I like what they're doing, but I just think at some point here the chickens are going to come home to roost, and the fact that your quarterback is taking so many shots is not a good thing.
Right. I'm right with you, and it's sort of this mixed feeling of being simultaneously impressed, you know, and I probably shorted him. I wasn't terribly impressed with the performance he had in the NFC, what was it, divisional game against the Seahawks out there last year to end the season. And I thought, you know what, this is a good player, but he still has his limitations. He's ballsy as all hell. I mean, he will take that big body and throw it around. He can make a lot of throws, but his field reading is average. And, you know, but he goes out and gets this monstrous contract. And I'm like, you know what, you just paid a very good player excellently. And I think whenever you go a notch up to what you're actually getting, it can sometimes wreck a roster. Now, I say that, and I look at what he's dealt with in the absence of Kelvin Benjamin with the injury early in the season, and you look at his roster of receivers. We're talking about Devin Funchess as one of the guys that was a converted tight end at Michigan playing in a terrible offense right. there, who's really just relearned that position. You got Jericho Cotchery. I love Jaco, old teammate, as a grinder of guy as there is out there, but he's sort of in the November of his career. And they're just going out there blocking really well at the wide receiver position to help spring some of these plays. You know, you have just an eclectic group of wide receivers catching one or two or three balls a week and helping them sort of make it work somehow, some way. They lose Luke Kuechly, their best defensive player, one of the best defensive players in football for now extended period of time, and continue to win. So I think you're hitting the nail on the head by virtue of making them unanswered, because you feel like they're on borrowed time, like they're getting away with so much, which is incredibly impressive. It's not to downplay the accomplishment. It's just to say how much of this is sustainable. So I put them right there with you. But the one thing I will give them credit for is being able to pull through that stretch. And they've still got that division. They've still got the Saints, and they've still got the Bucs that are just sort of shuffling their feet and going nowhere. So as many questions as I have, they might be right team, right time to be dealing with that, to be able to weather what they'll have to weather in that particular division. I'll ask you one last question, too, because as we are talking about these guys, you had a lot of experience in Tennessee. They're kind of, to me, in that same position. They've had a nice win, nice loss, and a very disappointing one a week ago against the Colts. I kind of put them in that same category of I've seen some positive things I didn't expect. Where do you feel like that Tennessee Titans sort of trajectory is in the next several weeks?
I think the trajectory is up, because I think, you know, I've been a big believer in the quarterback. Obviously, I think he's done some, of course, rookie things, but I think he's, you know, I think he showed some more promise than a lot of people gave him credit for. And I always thought that he would do good, just because my perspective on, and you know this, on Mariota was his, just the fact that he played in that system where it forced you to play, you know, in Oregon, were so fast, right? Everything was, you know, quick. The practices were quick. Right. The amount of plays they ran were quick. And it forces a quarterback to have to, you know, diagnose things quickly. I mean, he had to diagnose everything in his life quickly. So he's got a good, good base of doing that. And I think that's one of the most important things for an NFL quarterback, is to be able to, okay, where's the read at? There it is. Boom, pull the trigger. And I think he's done a good job of that. And, you know, their rush game has done a little bit better than I think people thought. So I think they're building there. I still think as bad as the Colts have been, I still think they're going to wind up in the top of that division again, because they have a head coach and a quarterback that I trust. And I think the Titans are still a year or, you know, at least 1 year away. The Jaguars are still terrible. Houston, you never know what you're going to get. So I can see the Titans finishing second in that division, but I think ultimately the Colts will find a way. It may not be pretty, but I think they'll find a way to win that division.
It's crazy, and the reason I transitioned into that group is I think it's a division that looks to me a little like the NFC South. They both kind of have that issue of what are we going to be? You know, it's there's so much uncertainty, and almost as if a flawed team might come out on top. I mean, I think the Colts are a highly flawed team, but I'm kind of with you. I think at the end of the day, by default, they'll muddle through enough of these games, and Andrew Luck will get it together, and they'll figure something out some way with Chuck Pagano. Well, they'll at least win more than they lose, and it should be good enough in that division, especially because they're not getting the challenge from Houston that I kind of anticipated they would. So maybe they turn that around, maybe they don't. But it feels like the NFC South feels like to me, where I still think the Panthers are a flawed team that'll a lot of the really good teams in the league wouldn't mind facing if this were sort of a playoff scenario. But I think they're going to win a lot of games because they sit in a similar situation. They have some teams that have way too many question marks. You know, Lovie Smith's group down in Tampa. I mean, what? I don't know. I don't know what's going on there. I mean, it just seems like a hot mess.
Well, it is. And to your point about the Colts, is again, I you know, who knows? 9-7 may wind up winning that division because every team is flawed and some more than others. So I think the Colts will end up on top of that. The question is going to be, is Andrew Luck going to be healthy enough by the time, okay, they may fight scratch and claw and you know, find a way to win that division, which I think they will, but is Andrew Luck going to be in a hospital bed at that point? If they can protect him enough and win, just win enough games, get in the dance. You know how it is, Matt. It's all about getting in the dance. Once you're in the door, then you can walk away with the prettiest girl, right? So that's kind of the thing for the Colts is getting in there, but also having a quarterback who's still, regardless of what people think, I still think he's one of the best young talents in the NFL. If he can, you know, protect him enough to be healthy for when they are in the dance, I think they can still do so.
Yeah, I'm. This might not be popular. You might actually disagree with me on this one, but I think that as I've watched Andrew Luck, I've been – I guess more critical of him because I'm a little sensitive to that class that they want to put him in that I don't think he's there yet. I mean, I look at Aaron Rodgers, I look at Tom Brady, I look at even Peyton, even again, him in more the December of his career. But I get the lure with Luck. I get it. I mean, he's probably more Aaron Rodgers-esque because he can do some things with his feet. He's big, he's strong. He can make all the throws, all that kind of stuff. But the mistakes that I've seen him make, in two successive playoff runs and then really the start to this season, there's stuff I don't see him fixing. And I find that kind of frustrating to watch is like, okay, the comments you make, and it's been a popular one and it's accurate. The issues they're having with their offensive line are absolutely true. And that's a huge contributing factor. But I also watch him turn down the easy throw far too many often to take the more aggressive throw. And that, to me, sometimes has nothing to do with protection. There are some times where I feel him hanging, wanting the deeper, more aggressive throw where the intermediate or the check down or the outside comeback is available, and he just won't take it. And sometimes I'm wondering in my head if he just doesn't see it or if, you know, they're by coaching told to be more aggressive or whatever it is. But when I watch Aaron Rodgers just sort of milking the Monday night game, when I watch Tom Brady just walking through things, what separates them from the other really good quarterbacks or potentially good like Luck to me is not one number, you know, like three, but you know, the third best quarterback to the fourth. I see an ocean between them because I think you become great when you see the whole field. You take exactly what's given to you. And the fact that protection is great doesn't matter because you get it out to the right spot regardless. And Tom Brady has had times where the protection hasn't been great. Packers have gone through stretches where, you know, you can't even name the Beluga's gone now. Like they've gone through stuff themselves where if the quarterback is so good, it doesn't matter. You know, you don't even need a running game. And I don't think Luck's there. I think he's still got some issues. So it was interesting to see the news come out of there this week that he's legitimately missing practices for the first time. And he is really banged up. So maybe it's just an issue of drawing up some plays that keep him a little more protected and forcing the balls into a certain place.
Yeah, well, and I think you make a good point about you need to take the, you know, the check downs when they're there instead of hanging in so long. I just wonder from his perspective, is he like, I have to do this because our running game, you know, we've been trying to build this running game for like 4 years. It hasn't really panned out that much. Our defense has been suspect. I just wonder in his head, he's like, I've got to hang in there and try to get the 18-yard dig versus the five-yard check down. But to your point, he needs to realize the bigger picture here. And the biggest picture is his health. He can't be taking these shots. You know, okay, yeah, it's great that you want to hang in there and be ruthless and take a shot and hit for a big play. That's great. I love that mentality. But above all else, if you're a Colts fan, you're like, look, man, we need you healthy. We need you standing by the end of the season if we want to win, you know?
See, I think one of the things that happens, and, you know, just being my own dumb luck, you know, sort of fall in this situation where I've, you know, got to come in basically when Tom did and watch his career progress and watch as good as it gets, you know, and then still being able to observe Aaron Rodgers and even Peyton, because there's been the rivalry. So that we're always sort of evaluating, sort of cross evaluation, I guess. But the one thing that I think is one of the biggest misperception in really great quarterbacking is that this idea that because they, I hate this word, but dink and dunk, but because they'll take not even just the check down, but when, you know, you'll see like levels routes, you'll see like a 5 yard or an 8 yard out cut with a 15 behind it. When you have a choice of which the two sort of out components to take, they always take the one that's open, and it isn't always the 18, but I always think that there's a perception out there that because they often take the low route that they don't get the opportunity to take the shots, but that's not true. It's sequencing. They just take the short stuff first until you suck on them, and then they hit you later. I think there's a lot of quarterbacks that don't do it at the same level that think they have to take it first. And when they miss on it, it's second and 10, you know, or it's third and 8. And the thing you never see Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers in, you don't see them in a lot of third and 12s. You don't see them in a lot of second and 9s because they'll take their shots on third and 3. They'll take their shots on second and 4. And it was second and 4 because they took that dump down you didn't want to take. So it's they get theirs. They just get them in a different order. I just think it's a smarter order. But you'll see those teams that come and fire out. Matthew Stafford, I mean, down the list, Jay Cutler, these guys that they're going to take the shot because we're aggressive. Well, they're aggressive too. They just do it aggressive when it's smart to be aggressive. But that's, again, my little soapbox.
No, it is. It's a very good point because, you know, it goes back to the philosophy of not forcing a throw, and maybe, you know, a perfectly thrown ball where you're going to get, you know, two shots from a defensive end, you know, yeah, and you complete that, but A, it wasn't really there. You could have taken the check down and you could be healthy right now instead of, you know, sitting there and you're trying to play through an injury and it's only, you know, October 1st. So no, I think it's a good point.
All right, Rock, man, that's all I got. So I'm definitely envious of you. Thanks for coming on the show. Doing a game out in the mountains. I'm a mountain man at heart. Haven't been out to Colorado since the summer. Love it so much. Enjoy that mountain air. Have a great game. I've got Northeast game this week. So I've got UMass and FIU probably in the rain. So definitely a little bit jealous of what you're getting to work with out there, man. Have a great time. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, very good, brother. Have a good call, and I will talk soon. Thanks.
Bye-bye. Thanks so much for listening to the Football by Football podcast. As always, the FBF podcast can be found for streaming or download on footballbyfootball.com or blogtalkradio.com. You can download the FBF podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the TuneIn Radio app. For daily insightful stuff from guys like Rock, myself, make sure you check out footballbyfootball.com. Check out our Facebook page and also give us a follow on Twitter at FBByF.
Thanks for listening to the Football by Football podcast. Football insight by football players.
Night, Lucky. Night, Dusty.
Good night, Ned.
Good night, Ned.
Good night, Ned.